This is Louder Than Words, the podcast from the University of Essex. I'm Professor Jules Pretty.
I'm journalist Martha Dixon. In this episode, we're shining a light on inequality.
What happens to people who end up at the wrong end of an unequal society?
Why does my mum have to work 3 jobs to get a minimum pay? Why are my shoes ripped? Why do I keep getting put in the internal exclusion room? Why does my local youth club always get shut down? Why do housing allow?
We're revealing research that uncovers the long view,
in which history helps us understand how to fix the things that lead to inequality.
It's possible to break cycles of inequality, poverty, deprivation. We've done it in the past, we can do it again.
And we're looking at simple solutions that narrow the gap.
We make things out of wood, which I never really understood. It is so nice to be outside with other people by your side, telling you things will be all right.
So what is inequality?
The UN says it is the state of not being equal, especially in status, rights and opportunities.
If you look at income, the UK has one of the widest gaps in Europe between the earners and the non-earners.
But the UK is better off than the United States, the most divided, wealthy nation in the world.
So what does that actually mean for those at the excluded ends of these scales?
Why are there bullet holes in the door of my flat? Why don't I feel safe when I'm outside? Why does my local youth club always get shut down? Why do housing allow people to be homeless? Why?
This powerful animated film was created by a UK charity called Reality Art.
It's all about giving a voice to the unheard.
And understanding what happens to you if you don't have opportunities.
I don't understand what's being said. They're using proper technical, long words. I'm so confused, so I'm just staying quiet.
They've called me in and I need to speak to my solicitor, but she's across the other side of the room.
I don't understand most things that they are saying to me. I'm scared because you don't know what they're going to say. They could say anything. There's so many people here looking down on me. I don't understand my sentence. It's just a load of numbers.
And now I'm in court and I feel so anxious. There's all these people I don't know staring at me and I'm worried I won't be able to get my words out.
And in this courtroom, they're all looking down on me, looking at me like I'm some bad criminal. They should think about why I'm here in the first place. They should read about my history, my story.
What's clear is that inequality can often lead to a downward spiral for those facing states in life like poverty and lack of good housing and education.
But it wasn't always so.
Investment in social capital and togetherness meant the UK was much more equal in the past.
If you take the long view of this, in the century between the mid-19th century and the mid-20th century, we saw the gap between the advantaged and the disadvantaged narrow quite a lot. So levels of inequality reduced quite considerably. And that was partly due to a levelling up through things like Victorian social reform, Edwardian social reform, where the state stepped in and introduce things like public health, public education, public housing.
Professor Pam Cox from the University of Essex says her research shows the amount of support the state gives is directly related to inequality.
And it can be cheaper in the long run to stop things becoming so deeply divided.
It was a state-based levelling up which helped to produce that reduced inequality. It was also to do with wealth creation. So living standards rising through economic growth. So I suppose the point for me is that inequality has a history, inequalities change, the causes of inequality change, but also the solutions to inequality change as well. And I think what's happened now is that we're seeing a return to historic levels of inequality, partly because some of those welfare state supports, or many of them, have been eroded, but also that the public have come to accept that erosion as something that is inevitable. You know, we can't afford these things somehow. And I guess a lot of the work I'm doing is looking at, well, look at the cost of what happens if you don't afford these things. When you see historic levels of inequality emerge again, then all sorts of horrible things happen.
Pam Pam is putting the spotlight on how inequality affects young people who've ended up in court.
She's doing this by looking at what happens to them now and what happened 150 years ago.
A recent historical project I was involved with traced the lives of 400 Victorian and Edwardian kids at the bottom of the social ladder, at the bottom of the ladder in the sense that they went through the youth justice system and the child protection system of the day. And we traced them to see what happened next over the course of their lives. And I guess we were pretty surprised to find that many of them, actually the majority, were able to what you might call level up. You know, they didn't stay sort of at the bottom. They came, they were able to get jobs, you know, rent houses. Lots of them ended up working in local agricultural factories. Some of them, because a lot of them were in the northwest of England, ended up working on the cruise liners going to the States from Liverpool. One of them ended up in Canada running his own photography business. Today, kids who go through the care and protection system and also through the youth justice system typically come out with much worse outcomes than perhaps when they went in. Their life chances are diminished by their experience rather than perhaps enhanced as we saw in the past, which is counterintuitive. It's not at all what we expected to find. But it shows you again that these things do change over time, and what we're doing now, you know, could be much improved, I think, if we took some of those lessons from the past.
Pam works to show society that supporting people rather than criminalising them can often be cheaper for the state and have better outcomes.
So I've been working with local authorities to help them to offer better care and support to mothers who are at risk of losing their children. So the stakes are really high for these women. And as I've said, a lot of them are facing all kinds of other issues, including the effects of inequality. It's possible to break cycles of inequality, poverty, deprivation. We've done it in the past, we can do it again.
Also helping others learn from history is Professor Lucy Noakes from the University of Essex.
If you look back at the Second World War, now we've heard an awful lot over the last year or so about the Blitz spirit, and we're all meant to show the Blitz spirit. But the Blitz, not entirely, but it largely fell on the poor. So, that was another fracture, that was another fault line. It showed how people lived. It showed that people didn't all have the same kind of opportunities to survive. And certainly in terms of sheltering, poor people didn't have the same access to shelters that wealthier people did. Or you were able to rent a house out on the outskirts, a bit like in April, May last year. If you had a home up in Durham, you were able to leave a city that looked like it was about to collapse under a pandemic. So it shows up inequalities more clearly. But the other thing that it does is that wars and crises like a pandemic can be moments of change. They can be moments when we can kind of pause and think about how we're going to do things better. And I would argue for the Second World War, there were two moments. It's 1942 and the publication of the Beveridge Report that sets the foundations for the welfare state. And then there's 1945, 1948, the creation of the welfare state, the creation of the NHS. And at the moment, I think we're at a point where we're thinking about how to, in the kind of government's parlance, how we're going to build back better. So it's a moment when you can think about how to tackle these inequalities that have been really shown under a kind of harsh light during a crisis.
Lucy says the political decisions that were made to try to change the inequalities the war threw up were not straightforward, just like today.
I think that the Second World War in particular has a particular place in British history and British memory and our sense of who we are as a nation. But I think that while we are very, very good at remembering particular moments of that war and maybe particular elements of that war, we do that at the expense of others, or the lessons we need to learn are those longer term lessons. We need to look at how they tried to build back better. And that took planning, and it took hard work, and it took imagination, and it took a commitment to taking some difficult decisions. Okay, the welfare state, the NHS, were not popular with a lot of people who saw that they were going to be paying more tax. Or, you know, some doctors were not happy about this. They were doing very, very well as, you know, in private practice, thank you very much. But to take decisions for the benefit of the wider community, not just for the minority, I think those are the moments from the Second World War that we really need to be looking at.
Lucy says her mission is to help people understand the long view and how to build a more equal society today.
I see part of my job as a historian as letting people know about these, you know, about the moments for me in the Second World War that we really do need to know about. So I do a lot of kind of public engagement work, working as media, doing podcasts, writing blogs, talking to journalists, because I think it's really important. If we are going to be as obsessed with the Second World War as we appear to be in Britain, let's at least understand it better, and let's think about what's really important and what we can really learn from. So we have not been bombed, luckily, over the last year, but what we have had is we've had a crisis that is going to leave, it's not going to just recede and leave us exactly as we were before. It's going to go, you know, that tide is going to go back, and there's going to be a lot of wreckage on shoreline, as there was at the end of the Second World War. And that's what we need to look at. How did they cope with that wreckage? How did they build back better? And that's what I'd really like. That's the kind of message that I try to get across in my work.
We've heard how inequality has changed, with life now much more unequal here in the UK.
So which parts of society does this inequality touch the most?
We also talk to people about the experience of the police and the lockdown.
This is a special lockdown diary to highlight how young black people see the police and justice in this country.
Did you get stopped by police during lockdown?
Yeah, once.
And how was that? What was your experience?
They stopped and searched me.
It was put together by sociology expert Alexandra Cox from the University of Essex. She says black people often receive different treatment than white people on the streets, and this leads to mistrust.
Kids make mistakes. It's very, very common for kids to make mistakes, but also kids are criminalized. So often what we know is that kids are stopped by the police quite a lot, particularly kids of colour.
Under what section? For what?
I don't even know the section.
Did you get stopped by the police during lockdown?
Yeah, a few times. Because they didn't stop me and tell me corona reasons, you have to be at home or you get fined. They've done that a few times, okay.
The youth justice system continues to be a system for poor children and always really has been. And I think right now the intersection is around sort of race and class and gender. So it's poor black and brown children.
How many times a week would you say you get stopped?
3 to 5, 6 max. That's because, like,
I mean, how do you feel about being stopped so much?
I don't like it. It just makes me feel like they're taking the piss. They see me as low to, like, just stop me whenever they like.
It continues to be a place where, in many ways, a lot of the kinds of existing social inequalities that we grapple with are kind of laid bare. So if you were to enter a youth prison or, you know, Feltham Young Offenders Institution, and you were to talk to a group of young people, you would overwhelmingly learn that they're in care. You would overwhelmingly learn that they have learning disabilities and struggle with mental health challenges, that they may have grown up hungry, that they may have grown up in substandard housing, that they will have faced intergenerational family challenges around poverty and sort of the attending problems of inequality. And I don't mean to say that to sound cynical, like, oh, you will meet those people. And but it just is so, so common. I mean, the numbers are astounding, of sort of the experiences that these young people have that become pathways to custody. And I think it's, some people talk about COVID as like kind of the system MRI, you know, it shows all of these existing inequalities, right? But I do think youth justice systems, even almost arguably more so than adult justice systems, become the place where all those inequalities are concentrated.
Alexandra is now working on solving some of these problems by supporting research for charities that push for change.
So I'm Stephen Whitehead, and I work for the Centre for Justice Innovation. We're an organisation which works to reform the criminal justice system. My role is to look after research at the centre, and that includes work I've recently done with the University of Essex on racial inequality in the youth justice system. At the centre, we work to change what really happens at the front line of the system. We work to change practice. So with the evidence from academic research, we can change the way the criminal justice system works. We can change the minds of practitioners, of police officers and probation officers and youth offending officers about what's important. We can use it to challenge inequality, and we can use that to make the criminal justice system fairer.
The Centre for Justice Innovation says the University of Essex research shows that discrimination and unequal treatment of people can ruin lives.
They're working to show to those who make decisions in the criminal justice system, the police and probation officers, that keeping people away from court helps combat inequality.
We know that being arrested, prosecuted, actually increases the chance that young people will offend again. And we know that if they get a criminal record, that's something that can follow them for their entire lives. So changing what happens at the front of the system, making sure that all young people have the chance to be diverted away from prosecution, away from the criminal justice system, is going to make the criminal justice system fairer for everybody and improve the life chances of people from ethnic minorities who'd otherwise could be badly treated.
There is a group called Green Light Trust who help you when times are tough.
And the University of Essex is supporting positive change in other fields too.
You go out into the woods and meet new people like we all should. You learn about fire and trees and different shapes of all the leaves. We make things out of wood, which I never really understood. It is so nice to be outside.
This trip was organised by a charity called the Green Light Trust.
It's all about getting people at the bottom end of the inequality scale out into green spaces.
And I ended up in a mental health unit a few times. I was getting voices, and I was going through psychotic episodes where I'd do things and couldn't remember doing it, and I ended up getting in trouble with the police. I went down the doctors loads of times to get help, but there's just not the help there now as what there used to be with all the cutbacks. And it's places like Green Light Trust that help people more, I think. I think if it weren't for Green Light Trust, I'd be in prison now.
The Trust works with people who are marginalised or disadvantaged in one form or another, and we use the natural environment as a means to support them in their development, recovery, education, or just a lot of the people that we work with are just stalled in life a little bit, and we help get them moving again.
Tom Brown is the chief executive of the Green Light Trust based in Suffolk.
I think everything that the Trust does, and probably always has done, has been about addressing inequalities in society. There's an inherent inequality because of land ownership. So actually a lot of it becomes about access to. So the inequality, it isn't necessarily nature that addresses the inequality, but the lack of access to means that you aren't able to benefit from the restorative and health and well-being benefits of being able to access nature. It's really interesting when you look at the effects of COVID in the first lockdown, and you hear stories about all of these people that are rediscovering the natural world and rediscovering nature in their gardens. Well, you know, that's great, but if you live in you live at the top of a high-rise flat in the middle of an urban area, you're not rediscovering nature in your garden, and because you don't have access to it. I think there is an inequality that is enforced by ownership, but there's also cultural and social inequalities that are kind of enforced within that. So actually, people go to areas where they feel like they belong, and if you have never been brought up, you can't identify trees, you don't know where you're allowed to walk, you can't do all of these things, you're not going to access something, and it doesn't become a part of your life, so you're missing out on that. So I think some of what we do is about giving people those skills to kind of, they're almost leveling them up with the rest of the population.
New research by the University of Essex has found there are astonishing financial incentives to use nature to level up.
People who went to the Woodland Therapy Programme ended up reducing their GP appointments by 28%.
And a quarter fewer hospital visits.
Each person who recovered from the mental health and social problems they arrived with is forecast to save the public purse nearly £12,000 over a decade.
I think the biggest thing is that the research is highlighting that green space is a indicating factor of inequality, and actually you can use it to indicate where inequalities are in society. But also what it does highlight is it can be part of the solution as well. So what it's highlighting is that we can use access to green spaces and the problems that nature is facing to fix multiple issues within society. And I really hope that research like this enables people to see how the natural environment is part of the solution.
We hope you've enjoyed Louder Than Words from the University of Essex.
This episode was all about inequality.
Tune in next time when we'll be shining a light on the unheard voices of those with brain injuries.
Thank you for listening. This was the Louder Than Words podcast from the Centre for Public and Policy Engagement at the University of Essex. You'll find links to the contributors and their work and books on the Centre's website.